Solar Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Moeller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Moeller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Moeller program. We're looking at about 30 days before the off-year election here, as all of the United States House of Representatives is up for a vote, and about one-third of the United States Senate. And, of course, all the political pundits are out there trying to decide what's going to happen. The pollsters and the survey takers are out there. Candidates are working the last feverish weeks headed into the campaign. And now a wild card has been thrown into the whole equation, one that is of interest, of course, in a media frenzy, having to do with Representative Mark Foley's resignation, the tawdry debacle of his predatory behavior towards young male pages, and the bigger issue having to do with the potential loss of confidence in the leadership in the House, the bigger issue than that, a loss of confidence in the political process. John Meacham, managing editor, now editor of Newsweek magazine, has been writing about that. Many others are observing it. The big question is this. It's of dramatic interest to candidates and to political pundits all over the country. Will Christians come out to vote? In particular, will evangelicals be unmotivated and fail to get out to actually cast the vote? That is a big question, because it has been recognized now again and again that the mobilization and political activism of conservative Christians has been a deciding factor in many races, both at the national and the local and the regional level. And so that is a big issue. If indeed evangelicals are giving up on the political process, then that is a big story. However, we don't know today if that's true or not. It's all a matter of surmise. It's all a matter of conjecture. But there is also a sense that out there among American evangelicals, there is a shifting understanding of our political responsibility. That's what we're going to be talking about today on the Albert Moeller program. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Several times on this program, we've asked the question, just what do you expect out of the political process? And I'm glad to say that that is now a much broader conversation. It's now a question is being entertained where perhaps it had very little interest before. Just what do we expect out of the political process, and what do we think we were dealing with anyway? The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll get back to that in just a moment. First, a review of some of the issues in the news. The announcement that North Korea has set off an underground nuclear test is huge. As a matter of fact, I think most of us, if anything, are going to miss this story by underestimating its importance. I mean, after all, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty has been one of the most important achievements of international law of recent decades. And now you have a rogue regime that is now not only contemplating and planning for a nuclear weapon, but actually has it in terms of the ability to do this kind of nuclear test. This kind of test means that they could, with the delivery systems they've already tested, deliver an atomic weapon across a fairly large swath of the Pacific, perhaps even reaching the western coast of the United States of America. All of that means that the equation, the international equation having to do with nuclear weapons and having to do with North Korea, is now reset. Now, I want to suggest that a couple of the things you ought to note in this are, number one, the incompetence of the United Nations. The United Nations said this must not happen. The United Nations, as an organization through its Security Council, said we will make sure this doesn't happen, but it's happened. And not only that, the United Nations is a toothless tiger when it comes to preventing a rogue regime. You know, it was Prince Metternich back in the Congress of Vienna, which was a post-Enlightenment meeting that really reset the entire picture of Europe and reset the field of what we call international relations. It was Prince Metternich who said the relations between nations only work when the nations act in their rational self-interest, when the nations act rationally in terms of their own long-term self-interest. What Korea has done here, North Korea, is not in its best interest. It's not in its self-interest, not except in the most frightening short-term analysis. And that's what makes this really scary. If the first thing is the incompetence of the United Nations to prevent this, the second thing is the wild card of China. After all, North Korea shares a border along the Yalu River with China, and that is a very contentious, very dangerous border, and China is a rational state. China may be a mystery to us, but it is a rational state that acts in its best interest. And you talk about a long-term view, the Confucian worldview of China is a very long-term view. And when China says, as it has officially, that this is a brazen act on the part of the North Koreans, that is quite a statement. And so I think the most interesting thing to watch in the short term is going to be the response of China, because my guess is they will not let this stand. Now, what this means, I don't know. But I do think this all of a sudden resets the equation there in the Pacific, and it'll be very interesting to watch this together. In terms of other news, of course, over the weekend, the funerals for the girls killed in the Pennsylvania Lancaster County Amish school murders. I want to point to that just to point to what didn't happen. What didn't happen was a series of reprisal murders. What didn't happen was a series of honor killings. That's what you might expect from some other worldviews. That's what you might expect from some other belief systems, but that's not what happened. As the Amish people instead showed the grace of their Christian belief and showed the substance of their Christian faith in burying their dead girls and doing so in a way that was agonistically lived out in the public eye, because the Amish people, by definition, do not want this kind of glare of publicity. They do not want this kind of public attention. As a matter of fact, it is a principle of Amish conviction that they are not to be photographed. And here were helicopters hovering over the groups of huddled Amish families at different points in their collective grief. This certainly raised to a new level of attention the people known as the Amish. That is not what they call themselves, but that is what they are called by those they call the English. That is the rest of us who are non-Amish. But it is a reminder to us that these, after all, are not just strange people with strange folkways. The Amish people are committed to Christian conviction. They are a part of the Reformation heritage, the radical wing of the Reformation known as the Anabaptist movement. And I was very, very, very thankful to see so many Amish persons responding publicly with a word of gospel and grace in the midst of this. And, you know, the one thing for which we can be thankful in the midst of this, as we look at death in the face as Christians differently than do unbelievers, we know that there is the opportunity for Christian testimony to the gospel of Jesus Christ, even in the midst of this awful grief. And for that in itself, we should be thankful. Other issues in the news have to do with things ranging from organized religion and denominations to children playing on the playgrounds. First of all, news report coming out, too, actually, that the American Baptist churches in the U.S. will be selling the denomination's headquarters in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. It's a large facility, circular in architecture, and only half of the facility is being used by the denomination. Why? Because it's shrinking. Why? Because national giving has been falling off, and so the offices are becoming vacant. And why is that happening? Well, I will make a very strong statement as to why. It's because of the theological ambiguity and the fact that that denomination has allowed rebellious churches to ordain homosexuals and to bless homosexual marriages and the rest. And because of that, one of the largest districts of the American Baptist churches has withdrawn from the denomination, and other churches are making their own decisions. Mainline Protestantism is dying of its own death wish. And what we see across the board is that these denominations are not growing. They are shrinking. And their accommodation with the modern world has not led to their success measured in numerical terms, but rather it has led to their decrease. A group of sociologists a few years ago looked at this and came to the conclusion that this was all due to what they called vanishing boundaries. When there is no strict boundary, no clear boundary between belief and unbelief, between the church and the world, then why go to church? In other words, if there's nothing distinctive and nothing is hanging on the line and eternity is not in the balance, then why be involved in this at all? The Louisville Courier-Journal reported last week that the Presbyterian fundraising effort, which was hoping to raise $40 million in a capital campaign beginning in 2002, is succeeding and failing simultaneously. It's raising the money, but the money is not coming in undesignated. There's so little faith on the part of many Presbyterian churches and donors in the bureaucracy of the denomination that they're designating all their giving, and there isn't even enough to pay for the staff doing the fundraising. There's a parable in that for all of us, but a part of what we need to see in this is that Christian organizations, in terms of leadership, have credibility only insofar as they're serving a distinctively Christian purpose, grounded in distinctively Christian conviction. The moment that evaporates, then who cares? You might as well support some other organization that, after all, may have a better claim to plausibility and a better claim on financial contributions. The demographic revolution in Russia has caught the attention of at least one mayor, and the governor of the region of Yelensk, Sergei Morozov, decided to give the workers of his area an afternoon off to go home and make a baby. So concerned about falling birth rates, he decided he'd give the time off, and he told them that they would receive an incentive ranging from a refrigerator to a washing machine to a four-wheel drive vehicle, depending on how many children the couple already has. Now that's an interesting approach to raising the birth rate. Meanwhile, in Tampa, Florida, Seminole, Florida, a man is claiming that he ought to be able to stop paying alimony to his ex-wife because the wife had a sex change operation and is now a man. As he said, if I can't marry a man legally, how can you legally pay alimony to a man? I think this man has a point. In these confused times, this is what we're left with. We'll be right back. You know, the whole political process is more complicated than many people recognize, and some people just don't even have the stamina to try to follow it. I mean, after all, you could watch the cable news networks and read all the newspapers and check all the internet sites, and you can never keep up with all the details and all the comings and goings, prognostications and projections. But, you know, the bigger issue is the long-term view. The bigger issue, I think, for American evangelicals is what we expect out of political engagement. And, you know, let me just give you a little background in this. Certainly it was true that no one would have been speaking back, say, in the early 1960s about the evangelical vote. That was just not a part of the political equation. It all of a sudden emerged basically in the 1980 presidential campaign. What happened between 1976 when Jimmy Carter was elected and 1980 when Ronald Reagan was elected is that evangelical Christians decided that it was very important to enter the political process in an organized way. You had the rise of groups such as the Moral Majority. And by the way, that was just the best known of an entire constellation of organizations that united evangelicals around political hopes and aspirations. The election of Ronald Reagan by a landslide in 1980. The re-election of Ronald Reagan by a similar landslide in 1984. These were seen as signs pointing to an evangelical domination of the political process. Evangelicals supported candidates who, by and large, just in terms of the political surveys and reports, were elected president in 1980, 84, and 88, and then again in 2000 and 2004. So if you look at the last seven presidential elections, five of them were won by the candidate most likely supported by evangelicals. And these are just documentable figures in terms of polling data and responses and all the rest. So evangelicals have been at least a part of electing five of the last seven presidential elections. That is to say, the victorious candidate in five of the last seven elections was supported by an overwhelming majority of evangelicals. So what do we have to show for it? Well, in the year 2006... Well, just to quote Harold Feynman, a certain weariness has set in as evangelicals realize that politics is by nature beyond redemption. Harold Feynman, writing for Newsweek and now at MSNBC.com, and then John Meacham, the editor of Newsweek magazine, is writing, and again, looking from the year 2006, looking backwards at all of this evangelical involvement, he says, quote, "For all the vaunted talk of the religious right's power in American politics, in fact, the central claims of the movement, constitutional amendments restoring prayer in school, banning abortion, and forbidding same-sex marriage have not been realized and are likely to be any time soon," end quote. So right now there are a lot of people out there pointing to the Mark Foley controversy, pointing to a supposed lack of confidence in House leadership and in the political process, pointing to a sense perhaps of malaise over the war in Iraq, and all the rest are saying evangelicals just may not show up to vote. That's why John Meacham wrote his article. That's why Howard Feynman wrote his column. And that's why an awful lot of pollsters and pundits around the country are saying, hey, maybe evangelicals hold the key once again. Maybe they hold the key to the 2006 election. But maybe they make their statement by not going out to vote. There are a lot of people out there concerned about this, and there are a lot of people out there hopeful about this. But I want to know what you think about this. Give me a call. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. How are you feeling in the midst of this? 30 days out of the election, are you energized? Do you see your vote as a part of your Christian discipleship and responsibility? Do you have a clearly defined set of political ambitions and what you want to see? Or do you think the political process is just broken? Do you think it's just beyond redemption? Do you think it's just not worth our effort? Or are you looking for some way that perhaps shows some reflective, Christian thinking that says, hey, the political process is important, but it can only take us so far. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. How are you feeling on this question? As we're talking in the first of October here, the very beginning of the month of October, which is the final month. And yet, I say it's the beginning, we're almost a third of the way through. You're looking at an election less than 30 days away, and there are politicians, candidates, and all the pundits and pollsters out there that are trying to figure out what you're thinking. But rather than have us treated like lab rats for some social scientist to survey, let's talk to each other. Intelligent Christian conversation about the current political moment and how we as evangelicals really evaluate where our responsibility lies and what we should be doing. The phone number again, 877-893-8255. Now, we've talked about this on the program several times in the past because it's one of those questions that recurs. And I think there have been moments when evangelicals have had far too much confidence in the political process. They really have, that is, evangelicals, maybe I should say we in terms of the movement, evangelicals have shown a complete lack of political sophistication in thinking that we can just march in and quickly gain the kind of victories we want to have the policies put in place that that really match our convictions. But then on the other hand, you have some people who say, look, if I can't get this and it's not going to happen and if it's this messy a process and you have to work with all these people and go through all these hoops and worry about a long-term strategy, then just count me out. I'm going to go back and raise my children and let the world just go on its own. Somewhere between there is a sane and responsible evangelical understanding of political engagement. Let's go to Mark calling from Floyd Knobs, Indiana, calling on WFIA. Go ahead, Mark.
Thank you, Dr. Mueller. I just think it's real important in this election for Christians to go out and vote. I don't believe it's a position that we can take, like you said, to go back and raise our families and go off to our mountaintops, because if we continue to do that, we're going to be marginalized as a group. We'll have no impact on this country whatsoever. So I just think it's real important for us to go out and vote in this election.
Is there any particular political issue, Mark, that energizes you? I mean, is there any one thing more than the others that would say, would lead you to say, I'm going to vote, even if I'm not really excited about this, I'm going to go vote because this is just too important? What would that issue be?
Well, I think it'd be abortion. I think it would be the social issues that we constantly struggle against, homosexual marriages. And I'm not going to say that I'm totally, pleased with our friends in the Republican Party with this latest deal with Foley, but what are the the question for me to ask other Christians? What are your who else can you vote for? You have to vote for the candidates that are going to support most of your values, at least, you know.
Well, Mark, I appreciate your call, and if I understand what Mark's saying, he said, look, it's a political process in which you basically have to make a decision about what's best long-term. You know, what candidate best represents your values and your convictions, and vote that way. More important than ever, he says. Let's go to George calling from Abingdon, Virginia, listening on WHCB. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, I was just going to comment about what you were talking about a while ago about conservatives or the evangelicals not voting. This deal with Foley has gotten, it's just the opposite. They did ABC or somebody did a poll in Southern Virginia to try to get the so-called conservatives to say that they were opting out of the process because of the Foley situation, and they couldn't find the right person because nobody was saying what they wanted them to say, so they went up to Northern Virginia where it's much more liberal. But down here, we are very, very energized, I think, because we see what's going on. We see what people are doing with the Foley situation and the whole moral thing. And I would crawl across broken glass to vote for Senator Allen and vote against Congressman Boucher.
Well, that says a whole lot about your sense of political conviction and commitment there. That's a metaphor I hadn't even thought of myself, but it speaks eloquently to just how determined you are in this process. Folks, where are you in all this? There are many. For instance, the editor of Newsweek, John Meacham, who says he detects that evangelicals just aren't all that energized or interested. Maybe like Howard Fineman, they're saying, look, maybe evangelicals don't feel like they have a lot to show for their political involvement. The phone number, 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the program. I'm just going to share with you some of my own struggle in trying to think this thing through as a Christian theologian. I really do fear that there are many evangelicals who, if they're disenchanted now, had fundamentally way, way too much confidence in the political process to begin with. You see, I think we have two false options before us, and that is either give yourself unreservedly to politics as if it's going to bring in the kingdom of God, or, on the other hand, just withdraw from the political process because it doesn't matter anyway. You know, neither one of those positions is biblically credible. Number one, there is no political platform that's going to bring social revolution and reformation and spiritual awakening. It's just never going to happen. No political platform or policy or party is ever going to bring America to God. This is just never going to happen. We're never going to bring in the perfect society by politics. After all, just watch what's happened in Washington over recent weeks. I mean, just to look at the Mark Foley scandal and all the rest. Who are we dealing with? We're dealing with sinners here. We're sinners electing sinners. And thankfully, not all sinning so egregiously as Mark Foley, but still, we are sinners in a fallen world who are electing sinners. And the moment we think that we can bring about some kind of basic change in human nature or change in the human condition by politics, we are fooling ourselves. But on the other hand, that doesn't mean that politics is not important. It doesn't mean that political engagement is not important. But, you know, we do not have two options here, either unreserved political crusade or just withdrawal from the political process. Withdrawal is not an option because a part of our responsibility as citizens is to render under Caesar what is Caesar's. And in this case, rendering under Caesar under a constitutional republic means voting. It means being politically engaged. We are the regime. We are the government. And for that reason, there is a claim upon every dimension of our lives that Christ makes, and certainly our political lives as well. And we do know that politics makes a difference. It does make a difference whether babies are aborted in the womb. It does make a difference whether the society recognizes marriage as the union of a man and a woman, or just laissez-faire, whatever you may want, same-sex marriage and beyond. It does make a difference. It makes a difference whether there is religious liberty for the preaching of the gospel, folks. It makes a big difference. And religious liberty is not just something that happens. Religious liberty is something that is a part of a political compact that must be maintained and defended and continually redefined, and we better be a part of that. But I think evangelicals have been swinging on this pendulum, and I really fear that a lot of the conversation right now about being disenchanted with this is among folks who just thought that politics was going to deliver, thought that if we just elect the candidate that we believe most holds our positions and most closely resembles our convictions, that we'll get it. That if we just elect the House and the Senate, then we'll get it. And we'll have a constitutional amendment defining marriage, and we will have abortion, defined in terms of elimination, so that we have unborn human life protected. We were really hoping for all that, but folks, that just isn't a part of the political equation, not easily. And it's because the basic human problem isn't political or economic or sociological; it's theological and spiritual, and we are the people who know that. And that's why the only answer to these problems, the only amelioration of the sin problem, is one that comes not by the political process, but by the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's by the cross. It's by the redemption and the atonement accomplished by Jesus Christ. And that means, however, that his followers do have a responsibility, which is made clear in the New Testament. But how we balance that in any political occasion, it's hard to tell. One of the things I'm concerned about right now is what I hear people saying, well, it's a protest vote. If I'm upset about this, well, you have people out there saying right now, look, conservative Christians are going to be so disgusted by the Mark Foley thing and by the way that maybe, and it's not proved yet, but maybe House leadership dealt with this, that they'll say, let's put the other party in. Well, folks, if you're dealing with personalities and merely personal behavior, then that might be a rational choice. But if you really have a sense of political engagement over issues, then that makes no sense at all. Well, what makes sense to you? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Robin, calling from Bluefield, New Mexico, calling, listening on KTGW. Go ahead, Robin.
Yes, I am in complete agreement with all the things that you were just saying. I think that it's a duty of all Christians in this country to vote. It's part of our civic duty, and I just want to urge all Christians out there to vote. I think terrible, and it's pathetic that there's about a 40% or 30% turnout rate among evangelicals, and I would like to see 100% turnout. And I think that basically, if you can vote and you don't, it's a sin.
Well, that is almost exactly what I was going to ask you, Robin, is if you would make the argument that a failure to vote is sin. And I think you're onto something very important there, which is that we, as citizens of this country, are given the opportunity to be a part of the very regime. We are, after all, in a representative democracy, the government, in terms of our ability to elect. And a failure to do that is a failure, I believe, to render under Caesar that which is Caesar's. But even in rendering under Caesar, of course, we have a higher allegiance. And we'll be right back. I don't mind telling you that I was a little uncomfortable with this whole topic today, and I'm even going to tell you why, and it's because it just, it sounds so political. And my main interest, even in this political question, isn't politics. My interest is from a Christian worldview experience and from a Christian worldview dimension. What is it that we think we're supposed to be doing in politics anyway? I mean, it seems to me that this is where Christians need to be thinking at a higher level than the political pundits and the pollsters are out there operating. You know, it's not just who will vote and why, and who will vote for whom and why, or who won't vote at all. It's really a question of how we as Christians understand our cultural engagement. You know, what are we supposed to do in this fallen world? To what extent are we to be about the affairs of this world? And what are we expecting out of politics anyway? Because I think the kind of article written by Howard Fineman and John Meacham there at the MSNBC website, I think that's the kind of article that reflects that some evangelicals had a very naive understanding of what politics could deliver. And now that it's not delivering all that we thought it promised, a lot of evangelicals are saying, maybe I won't vote. Then again, they may not be saying that. We'll find out on Election Day. But the bottom line is, we had better as Christians be talking about it. The phone number 877-893-8255. Let's go to Kara, listening on WFIA, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Kara.
Thank you, Dr. Mueller. I appreciate all of your commentary, and especially when you're on the cable news networks. I appreciate having an intelligent, eloquent person being able to share our Christian views with
the world. Thank you, Kara. That's kindly said.
I feel that as Christians, our vote needs to be something that we can defend, and something that if we were standing before the Lord, that we would be able to have His approval on our vote, whether it's our vote or our lack of vote, as it were. We need to understand as Christians that there is an all-out war between worldviews, between secular progressives and atheism, and traditionalists that have a faith in morality. And our vote can be the deciding factor in which way different issues are decided. Many of our elections are decided by a handful of votes, as we've been seeing in the news. And I feel that it's just very important that Christians put, if their faith is truly primary in their lives, then their faith should be primary in their decision for who to vote for.
Kara, I think that last point is really, really important, and that is that we have to show up as Christians wherever we are, and that includes the voting booth. And we not only show up as born-again believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, we better show up as Christians who can think Christianly about the decisions that we make, whether it comes to voting or economics or anything else in life. And I really do appreciate your call, Kara, because you have a deeper sense of responsibility than just some kind of civic responsibility to get out the vote and to go out and vote. And, you know, I don't think that gets very far this day. I don't think many citizens are motivated by the guilt of not voting. I think citizens get out and vote because they think something's important enough to go to the effort to vote. And I think Christians better understand why this is important enough to get out and vote, and also why this isn't important enough to think that that's all we have to do, and why that isn't enough to believe that we have fulfilled our Christian responsibility. Let's go to Gina, listening on WHCB, calling from Johnson City, Tennessee. Go ahead, Gina.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I just wanted to make the quick point that that it shouldn't just be an adult issue. As much as possible, I think parents should bring their children in on the voting process and the political process from a Christian worldview.
Gina, do you do that with your own kids? Tell us how you do it.
Absolutely. I take them with me to the voting booth, and we go in together, and even though my vote only counts once, we do it all together. We discuss the issues beforehand, and they're in there helping me.
Well, that's a sweet model right there. I can remember doing that with my parents, by the way, going and watching them vote. And it was a very, very special moment. I mean, I realized something important was going on here. And I can remember the old mechanical voting booths where you had the little lever you pulled down and you heard the little ching almost like a cash register. And you were, it was like, as a kid being in one of those polling places, it was like the magic of hearing all these sounds as something very important was going on. And I think some evangelicals who say, look, we just need to punt on the political engagement, they don't recognize what it is to live when the regime is openly hostile to the Christian faith. And it does make a difference, even in terms of the ability to preach the gospel. I mean, I look across this country and I see so many ministries that flourish because, at least in terms of our ability to do what we do, to publish the materials we publish and to openly teach and preach what we do because of religious liberty. But that isn't just a fact of nature. That's a political achievement. And it takes constant vigilance to make sure that that is maintained as well. Let me just talk about some of the things that I hear out there that concern me. I mentioned the whole Foleygate thing. You know, number one, we believe in sin. That is what we know to be the fundamental human problem, and thus we are the unshockable people. We're the people who know that people given the opportunity, sinners will sin. Sinners given the opportunity will sin. And so when we see something like this, even as heartbreaking and as frankly sickening as some of what's coming out of Washington right now, you recognize that this is what sinners do. They sin. And when we look at something even as awful and as embarrassing as this, we need to recognize this is sin working its way out. But, you know, even the people all the way up the system and all the way down to the voting booth are also sinners. And that's the problem. That's why the political process can't fundamentally solve anything. It can't resolve the human problem because it's nothing more than sinners organizing themselves at the very best in the way that will do the greatest good and the least damage. But there's no salvation out of the political process. That doesn't mean, however, that it's not important. Because in this fallen world, we do, as Christians, have responsibilities. And one of those responsibilities is, to render under Caesar that which is Caesar's, which in this case, I believe, clearly means the vote. We are in a representative democracy, and we are a part of this process. By the way, a decision not to go vote is a decision. It's a political decision. So even people say, I don't make a political decision by not voting. They're making a political decision by opting out of the process. So I hope Christians don't do that. I think if evangelicals all of a sudden just get disheartened and say, you know, I we're going to withdraw from this, I'm not concerned about who gets elected and who doesn't from an eternal perspective. I'm concerned with whether or not we're faithful in representing our deepest convictions and in representing what we know to be right in the midst of what is a long-term political process. Nothing's easy and nothing's fast in politics if it really matters. And over time, we come to understand that, well, political parties will do what is in their own best interest. Political candidates will sometimes lie and will sometimes cheat and will sometimes do obscene and awful things. But that doesn't mean that we can just turn around and ignore the political process, because that's true in every other dimension of our life as well. It's not just politics. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. John Meacham, the editor of Newsweek magazine, writing an article entitled God and the GOP, makes this statement, and I'm jumping in the middle of an argument he's making here. He says that we can never say enough about the theological complexities that confront the serious religious believer in the political realm, end quote. Well, that is just profoundly true. We can never say enough about the theological complexities that confront the serious religious believer in the political realm. And for the evangelical Christian, this is particularly acute as a problem, because this is not a matter of long-term political thought or theological reflection on the part of evangelicals. We're kind of new to this. And because of that, we just don't have the kind of long-term extended, intellectually vibrant conversation about this. And so right now we tend to talk in pragmatic terms, what works and what doesn't. And we tend to think in strategic and tactical terms in politics rather than thinking about the deep underlying foundational issues. You know, we have to be in this for the long haul. Time and time again, you've heard me say that my outlook on life as a Christian is, it's often described as Augustinian, based in Augustine, the great 5th century father of the church, who wrote his most significant theological works as the Roman Empire fell. And in that moment of cultural agony, Augustine, who was the bishop of a church there in northern Africa, he wrote a great book entitled The Kingdom of God, in which he said, the City of God, in which he said there are two cities. There is the earthly city and the heavenly city. And he said the problem is that the inhabitants of the earthly city are often seduced into thinking that it is the point, when actually the earthly city is disappearing and the heavenly city is eternal. And yet, as even the Roman Empire was falling, Augustine, a very, very biblical pastor, when it came to advising his congregation, said, the world is passing, but it's still important, because it's the world into which Jesus Christ came. And it's the world in which sinners live. And if we are the people of the gospel, charged to take the gospel to sinners, then we're going to have to take it to the sinners in this world. And that means we're going to have to get involved in this world's mess. Folks, that's a pretty depressing picture if you look at it just from a short-term perspective. But if you look over the long term, you recognize that God's glory is in his people, his redeemed people, the church, being engaged in his name in every aspect of the culture, understanding that it is passing away. And because of that, we can't give ultimacy to anything. We cannot ascribe ultimacy to art, to music, to economics, to sociology, to politics, to business, or anything else. But that doesn't mean it's unimportant. If you say, I'm going to withdraw from politics, and you might as well withdraw from your work and withdraw from modern medicine and withdraw from, well, just about every aspect of life, because it's all a part of this fallen culture. You can't make politics different than every other aspect of life. And Jesus Christ makes a claim upon the totality of our lives. And this is the place for Christians to engage in intelligent conversation about what faithfulness in the midst of this would look like. And we'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.